This is your call. I'm Rose Aguilar. For the past 2 months, women in Texas have been forbidden from getting an abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, making it the most restrictive abortion ban in the country. The law makes no exceptions for incest or rape. And the after effects have been devastating. Women have had to travel cross state thousands of miles away to clinics in Oklahoma, Louisiana, and New Mexico to get abortion care, which is then causing wait times in those states to surge. The number of legal abortions performed in Texas this September dropped by 50% from September of 2020. This is according to data released by a group of researchers at the University of Texas at Austin. Yesterday, the Supreme Court heard arguments in two cases known as SB 8, Whole Woman's Health versus Jackson, and United States versus Texas. Joining us to get updates on all of this is Shefali Luthra. Shefali covers the intersection of gender and healthcare at the 19th, an independent newsroom reporting on gender, politics, and policy. Hi, Shefali. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. So just to remind listeners, no state has ever done what Texas has done. It is basically banning something that the Supreme Court has said is protected under the Constitution. But Texas is saying, we will not enforce this. We will let private citizens file lawsuits in state courts with damages of at least $10,000. And that was what was at issue during yesterday's oral arguments.
Yes. And this is really important, right? Because what's happened is the state has found a way to thus far circumvent the protections in Roe v. Wade. And by doing so, right, it has created this law where the state is technically not the one criminalizing abortion. It's outsourced it. There are these bounty hunters who maybe will get a $10,000 minimum financial reward if they can successfully sue someone who has aided or abetted an abortion in the past 6 weeks. What's happened in Texas is there's a total chilling effect, right? Nobody is providing abortions past 6 weeks because they cannot bear the risk of that kind of legal action. No doctors, no clinics. And so far, the law has been able to evade the protections of Roe v. Wade because it's been very difficult for the plaintiffs to find someone they can sue. The Supreme Court early on in September said, you know, you can't actually sue the state officials who are right processing these cases, because they said, you know, there's no proof that these are the actual people doing you harm. And it's gotten into this really intense legal back and forth that has allowed this law to stay in effect until then. And it's been so effective that other conservative states, Florida among them, are looking at replicating the law when they come back into session.
So there's a little bit of confusion because there were two cases that were heard yesterday. So can you tell us about both and what could possibly happen as a result of the rulings?
Absolutely. So the first case came from the state's abortion providers, right? Whole Woman's Health is one of the biggest abortion providing networks in Texas, and they filed suit immediately, right? And that hadn't really gotten anywhere yet. They had really struggled to get anywhere in court because of a variety of mechanisms undertaken by this conservative appeals court. After the law took effect, the federal government stepped in as well, and they argued not only that the law is unconstitutional, but that it really undermines the sovereignty of the national government, right? Because they cannot enforce the law in Texas. So the Supreme Court heard both of these cases, which are making similar but different arguments, right? Because the federal government argues it has a unique interest separately from the abortion providers in Texas to make sure the rule of law can stand. What many who watched arguments yesterday expect to happen is for the Supreme Court to find that the case the abortion providers have put forth should continue to proceed. They are imagining that we will see some sort of injunction finally come after this law has been in effect for more than 2 months, and that would block the law. It would allow Whole Woman's Health to continue challenging the law in court. And what many expect is for this case filed by the DOJ, which raises very complicated constitutional questions, to be put on ice because the court perhaps does not want to actually get into those messier questions.
So let's play a clip. This is closing arguments on that case from the new U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preligar.
The final point is to just step back for a moment and think about the startling implications of Texas's argument here. Across the arguments this morning, Texas's position is that no one can sue, not the women whose rights are most directly affected, not the providers who have been chilled in being able to provide those women with care, and not the United States in this suit. They say that federal courts just have no authority under existing law to provide any mechanism to redress that harm. And if that is true, if a state can just take this simple mechanism of taking its enforcement authority and giving it to the general public, backed up with a bounty of $10,000 or $1 million, if they can do that, then no constitutional right is safe. No constitutional decision from this court is safe. That would be an intolerable state of affairs, and it cannot be the law. Our constitutional guarantees cannot be that fragile, and the supremacy of federal law cannot be that easily subject to manipulation. So we would ask this court to hold that the United States can proceed with this action and affirm the preliminary injunction entered by the district court and immediately vacate the stay that the Fifth Circuit entered in this case so that Texas cannot continue to deny women in its borders a right protected by this court's precedents one day longer.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.
Those are closing arguments from the new U.S. Solicitor General, Elizabeth Prelogar. And what she was doing there, Shefali, and you wrote about this, is talking about what it might mean for constitutional rights more broadly. That was one of the key focus points. How did the justices respond to that?
The justices really took to that argument, and two in particular, whom many were surprised by, were Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. They seemed really open to the concern that if the Texas law stays in effect, if it remains standing, that it could be detrimental for all sorts of constitutional protections, right? Brett Kavanaugh spoke about the potential for gun rights. He imagined, right, these liberal states taking a Texas-style law and creating a bounty hunting structure for maybe people who own guns. And I think what we're seeing there is that there is a really clear self-interest that unites justices, at least perhaps a majority of them, across the political spectrum, who, even if they are not concerned about abortion rights, are deeply concerned that the legitimacy of the Supreme Court and the federal government's power could be jeopardized by laws like this going into effect.
So what's the time frame on this?
This has been incredibly fast moving. The federal government requested that the Supreme Court intervene, and within days, a hearing was scheduled. That hasn't happened since Bush v. Gore. And what happened then was a decision came very quickly. And so what a lot of legal experts I've spoken to are speculating is that we could see something come down within the week. And as I'm sure you know, if there is an injunction blocking the law in Texas, the relief would be tremendous for people who are seeking abortions, who are providing abortions, but it very well could be temporary because the Supreme Court is scheduled to hear another abortion case later this term.
The Mississippi case.
Yes, the Mississippi case is scheduled for December 1st. It's looking at a law that has not taken effect, a 15-week ban in Mississippi. And letting that law stand would very likely undermine the key protection of Roe v. Wade, because Roe v. Wade allows the right to an abortion up until a fetus can independently live outside the womb. That typically happens around 24 weeks. 24 weeks is later than 15 weeks, right? So if you let a 15-week ban stand, you need to find some way to rethink how Roe v. Wade works if you are not going to gut it entirely. And abortion providers and reproductive rights advocates are very concerned that that is what's going to happen.
Today, we're speaking with Shefali Luthra. Shefali covers the intersection of gender and healthcare at the 19th, a nonprofit newsroom reporting on gender, politics, and policy. She has been writing about the abortion ban in Texas and the fallout. We're going to talk about how women and girls have been affected by this. But first off, Shefali, you know, talking more about the ability of private citizens to file civil lawsuits with damages of at least $10,000. Do we know if that is happening?
It has, in fact, already happened. There are at least three instances where private citizens have sued. Some of them are not actually in Texas. They have sued from outside of state because there's no geographical requirement for where you have to live to file suit. The first one was filed soon after a doctor named Alan Baird in Texas wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post talking about how he had performed an abortion after 15 weeks. But bigger picture, providers are generally afraid, right? They are following this law to the letter, which means that there aren't a ton of lawsuits being filed. And in all honesty, the authors of this law are very happy about that, because when lawsuits are filed, that creates a greater opportunity for this law to again be challenged in court.
So let's talk about how this is actually happening, affecting people on the ground. We know, I mean, we've been talking about this for so many years, that poor women and girls and people of color are hit the hardest. If you've got money, I mean, it's horrific that you have to do this, but you can fly to another state, you can get a hotel. It costs money to go to another state. So you just wrote a piece about how the ban is causing wait times at clinics and surrounding states to surge. And this is according to some new research from the Texas Policy Evaluation Project at the University of Texas at Austin. So tell us more about what they found.
These numbers were jaw-dropping, right? The Texas Policy Evaluation Project looked at wait times in September at clinics in Oklahoma, in Louisiana, in New Mexico, right? These essential neighboring states to Texas. And what they saw is these clinics just cannot meet demand right now. There are waits often longer than 2 weeks to book an appointment. And you know what that means, of course, right? Is if you have to wait 2 weeks to get an abortion appointment, your pregnancy progresses. And that can mean going from a simpler, less invasive, less expensive procedure to something that requires a surgery, right? Which is safe, but is more invasive and costs more. What we're also seeing, I've spoken to clinics in Oklahoma who are trying to call clinics in other states, right, in Mississippi to refer people elsewhere because they don't have room for the patients in their own states, let alone the patients coming from Texas.
So I think this is such an important point. A two-week delay could push someone from being able to consider a medication option to the point at which only surgery is the only viable option. And again, that means traveling. It's time. It's money. And I'm sure this is happening on a regular basis based on the data.
The money, I think, is just so important. I was in McAllen, Texas, in the Rio Grande Valley a few weeks ago, trying to find out, right, what's happening there, because there is only one clinic serving, right, this immense region in the state. And I remember speaking to a woman in the clinic who told me she had come in. She was luckily under 6 weeks. She had the money to pay for her abortion, which was $650, because she had been saving for a house. Mm. And I just keep thinking, what if you're not saving for a house, right? And you are pulling money from savings from something else to pay for this really mammoth and inherently unplanned expense. And that is going to be a barrier for so many people.
What struck you about the women, and maybe even, well, it's hard to interview, young girls, obviously, but this really does affect young girls. And I feel like that's the one piece that's missing from this. I mean, we talk about this a lot on this show, but the fact that as a society, we don't talk about things like rape and incest. And the fact is, this is happening. And I just, when we do the research for this, I just think about the young girls who cannot talk to their families, who might have violence in the home. Have you been able to do any reporting on young girls who are affected by this?
We have. My colleague Jennifer Gerson and I have written a few stories on this. And what's happened is the Texas law has made abortion access essentially impossible for teenagers. And there are a few reasons for this, right? But the main one is that Texas, like many states, has a parental consent law if a teen is seeking an abortion, right? And you don't need parental consent if you can get a judge to intervene, right? This process called judicial bypass. That usually takes a week or two. And what that means, right, is you already have a very short window from when you know that you are pregnant, right, which people don't find out before 4 weeks at the absolute earliest. So you have 2 weeks, and you need 2 weeks to get a judicial bypass to get an abortion. What that means is people aren't. I've spoken to doctors who have worked with young undocumented minors, and basically everyone is being sent out of state because they cannot get an abortion in Texas. And that means exactly what we talked about, right? It means they have to travel further. It means their pregnancies get later. They are uprooted from any support network they've built, and they have to start all over. It's really difficult. And I think for a lot of these young girls, it's just, it adds another burden to an already really terrible process.
Well, and it's so devastating because what we really need, obviously, is education and access to families lifting themselves out of poverty in many instances. I mean, I remember going to a clinic, the only clinic in Mississippi, and the counselor said that they have young girls, some girls holding teddy bears coming in. The mom said that they had no idea how the girl got pregnant. And then the girl said, oh, you know, the son of mom's boyfriend came into my room at night. I mean, this is stuff that we don't want to talk about. We hardly ever talk about, but this happens. And so who's getting hit the hardest is these girls. And I just, how do we bring that into the larger discussion, Shefali? Because it's just not numbers. It's just not laws. It's so much more than that.
I think the only way to tell stories like this, and something we really work to do in our journalism, is to emphasize the human narratives, right? Because every time a law like this passes, people are affected. And it's really important to capture those stories because that's the only way to really convey what this means and why it's important and why for so many people, right? Abortion, reproductive healthcare at large are all life or death stories.
Right. And then also guests that we've had on say it's also important not to bring on the most extreme cases because abortion is a constitutional right. One in four women will have an abortion in their lifetime. There are many moms. This is healthcare. It is very safe. And this is a safe procedure. And, you know, yes, the extreme cases are horrific, but there's many, many cases and we should include all of them when we're talking about this.
I think that's really well put. I mean, people's stories are important and valid no matter what their circumstances are.
Right. So we have a question from a caller. I'm sorry, William, we don't have time to take your call. But William Wright says, if a question of legal precedent, if the Supreme Court can keep women from getting an abortion in Texas, by the same principle can, for instance, California keep people from owning guns?
That is exactly the argument the gun lobby made in an amicus brief filed in the Supreme Court yesterday. And that is the exact argument that Justice Brett Kavanaugh raised. It is certainly something on the justices' minds as a very real implication if a law like the Texas law is upheld.
What is the time frame for overturning this law so people can go back to getting basic care in Texas? Do we have any idea? If the Supreme Court says that an argument can be heard, then what happens?
They would have one of two possible actions. The Supreme Court itself could issue an injunction blocking the law, or they could send the whole decision back to the district court in Texas, which has previously sought to issue an injunction and was blocked by an appeals court. So we don't know how quick, but we can imagine it would be fairly quick after a decision is made that the law would be blocked. We also know that it's very possible that that could be temporary because much will depend on how this case progresses because the injunction only stays in effect while the law is being challenged. And simultaneously, of course, there is this lingering possibility that Roe v. Wade could be overturned or severely weakened when the Supreme Court rules in the Mississippi case sometime next summer.
Right. And so, yeah. It's to even say the words overturn Roe v. Wade. If that happens, the Guttmacher Institute says only 13 states will be available for women to get abortions without restrictions. So 13 states will become the nation's abortion havens.
And I think what's important about those numbers, right, is that's not every state that would allow abortion, but they're the ones that are accessible, right? You're going to see lots of people going to Illinois and to Kansas and to California, because if you live in a state that has restricted access, those are places that have abortion protections and are nearby, right? Going from Texas to Rhode Island doesn't make a ton of sense when you could go from Texas to Illinois. Mm.
Well, Shefali, thank you so much for your reporting and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Shefali Luthra covers the intersection of gender and healthcare at the 19th. It's a nonprofit newsroom reporting on gender, politics, and policy. You can find her latest pieces about the Texas abortion ban and others and the Supreme Court hearing at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. You can find links to all of our shows and share them with your friends at yourcallradio.org. You can also sign up for our podcast. If you listen through iTunes, be sure to leave us a review so others can find us. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.